just seems that no matter where you go, especially in the Middle East, Iran is behind it. Wherever there's trouble, Yemen, Syria, no matter where you have it, Iran is behind it. And now, unfortunately, Russia is getting more and more involved. But Iran seems to be behind everything where there's a problem. And you just have to take a look. You look at what's happening. You look at the fighters. Iran is always there. And we're not going to allow certain things to happen that are happening. And the Iran deal is a disaster. They're testing missiles. And what is that all about? You look at the ballistic missiles that they're going and testing. What kind of a deal is it where you're allowed to test missiles all over the place? What kind of a deal is it when you don't talk about Yemen and you don't talk about all of the other problems that we have with respect to Iran, especially look at what they're doing in Iraq? You just take a look at what's happening in virtually any place in the Middle East, Iran is behind it. So what kind of a deal is this where it wasn't even discussed? And I know John Kerry made the statement that he didn't want to discuss other things while he was making the deal, despite all of the money that we gave them. He didn't want to discuss it because it was too complicated. That's not the way to do it, because it was too complicated. So we made this terrible deal, but we'll be discussing it.
Everyone, I hope you are all well. This is Jonathan Devine for Mod State, the Modern State. And I'm filling in, or not filling in for Mr. Wellheim, but I'm certainly doing an episode on my lonesome here. You know, all by myself. Enough shenanigans. I'm here to provide a modicum of a response to Mr. Wellheim's statements on the Iran deal and the challenges, but by no means an insult to my compatriot here, my comrade. But his impressions were certainly somewhat limited, and that's no insult to him, but rather, I'll come out with it in the sense that I agree very much with him that this is somewhat much ado about nothing, okay? Because, and that goes to the very fabric of the Iran deal itself from a political perspective in the United States. It's, forget the plus Germany deal, because Germany is Iran's largest international trading partner. Germany is, okay? So that's why the agreement was under the auspices of 5+1. I'm going to just call it 6 countries. This is murky enough. But with that, so these political issues in the United States come about. You could say it was a bit of political arrogance on the part of President Obama. I don't know that it was necessarily that way. I think it was probably just, well, the reasonable assumption that everyone's going with here. And that was that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president of the United States. Why that matters is because this Iran nuclear deal or treaty, as people and including mainstream media outlets have been calling it, this is not partisanship. The fact is, under law, it was not a treaty. In fact, the phrase used by the Obama administration, if I can see my notes here, yes, the State Department said in a letter that the deal reflects political commitments between the 7 nations involved, the 7th being Iran, of course. So the language was used because otherwise a quote-unquote treaty has to go through the Senate. And President Obama knew that it didn't have a snowball's chance in hell of making it through the Republican-controlled Senate. They were opposed to it for whatever various and sundry reasons. The fact is they were. Okay, it wasn't going to make it, so he used a tool, basically, of language, a clever political move, but again, it's pretty clearly based on the assumption that the vast majority of the globe, let alone America, believed, and that was that Hillary Clinton was the next president. So she would simply use whatever tools were necessary to her to keep the agreement alive until the Democrats could retake Congress in 2 years, because that's another issue that would have gone into this. Yes, they still held, obviously, the majorities in both the House of Representatives and the Senate upon the conclusion of the 2016 election. However, the reality was that with President Clinton, they would probably just continue along as the opposition party, just being the party of no as much as they can, and the Democrats would have run, obviously, on, hey, let's get something done, as opposed to, you know, but regardless, okay, neither here nor there, one might say, but it all goes into the dynamic of how this, or why, rather, and how this deal went down the way it did, in a sense that, no, legally it wasn't a treaty, but it was legal, okay? So, to me, this is readily solved by kind of a hybrid of the line item veto and Congressional Review Act, but that's another podcast. Bottom line is, this deal was politically poisoned, or excuse me, this political commitment, as the State Department said, was poisoned from day one. And that's not because I believe that President Obama was right or the Congress was right in the way they felt about the issue. But the fact is, the instruments of power here are a little too murky, and it's caused headaches for us down the road because, again, arrogant or simply what we thought was fact-based, it was done quite clearly under the auspices that, yes, the next administration is going to continue this policy. So with that, looking at the Iran nuclear deal, I'm going to synopsize this very quickly. And it simply was, in effect, punting the ball down the field with a nuclear program in Iran, in that by 2025, most of the mechanisms, most of the things that, obstacles, for lack of a better term, international red tape, would have been cleared out of the way at that point, that they could have enriched uranium and build the quote bomb at that point. All right, so the world was not collapsing before this deal was signed. It has not collapsed since the United States has stated via President Trump that we're pulling out of it. I would like to point out, though, as per C-SPAN reported, after the president's statements stating his intention to withdraw America from this accord or political commitment. It's a very strange phrase. This isn't about whether President Obama was right or wrong. It's simply, do we have to go this way? This is strange enough. This whole thing's bizarre enough. Do we have to use this murky language in labeling the deal? But at any rate, so again, this has nothing to do with whether I think President Obama was right or wrong in this. If you believe in the treaty enough and you're the president, then fine. Go about it whatever way you see fit. But not just because of what President Obama did, but because of what President Trump and whatever president in the future could do in, again, a politically justifiable move, is now causing us tremendous headaches, and not just within our own government, obviously. There's been massive intrigue with a certain president of France that, again, it's amazing that President Trump and he seem to be very good friends, but that whole visit over here to urge the United States to stay, the bromance per the mainstream media, it wasn't necessary in the sense that, A, this was not a good gambit to think that this deal was going to last, you know, past congressional review. And on the other side of the coin, it's not as though the world is collapsing since we've stated this. That one little fact, again, I didn't finish this, my apologies, trying to read my own notes here is a disaster. One of the things that C-SPAN reported was that it's technically a 90-day window. There's a 90-day window from when President Trump declared his intent to pull America out of this deal and to when he actually makes that call saying, yep, we're out. So that's something to bear in mind here, that this could get more interesting yet. This could be yet another attempt at bargaining, but or being the great negotiator. The latter half of this, there were some thoughts that we had on the upcoming North Korea talks, which, as this is going along, we're not so sure, and the administration certainly doesn't sound so sure that it's actually going to happen, this meeting, this summit with the North Koreans, the South Koreans, the United States, and I'm fairly certain China and Japan are going to be around this somehow. At the very least, China will be. So which one is more important? I got that question from one reader and one subscriber to the podcast. And which one is the biggie out of these two? Like, if you have to pick one to settle let's forget arguments that every nation has the right to determine its own course, bad actors, the Bush Doctrine, all that. Let's keep this much. I'm going to try and keep myself and the listener and the whole picture out of the murkiness here. But so Iran is something, it's in an unstable region. It's certainly a stable country as far as it's a dictatorship. There'll be stability or somebody's getting shot, you know, so there's stability in that sense. The students have been, there seems to be an urging to foment revolution, but it seems also as though we're saying that about Iran every other year. North Korea, yes, they want something that Iran wants. This is one common factor that they have here, is they want respect, okay? And it's like, well, duh. Here's the difference in the well, duh, all right? Iran, I don't think, is centered so much on bluffing. Sure, they're bluffing as far as, will we actually drop the big one on Jerusalem? Well, everybody better fire them off at the same time at that point, because that's, World War III doesn't describe how that, just blowing up the Dome of the Rock alone. But so Iran, I think, is a far more serious actor in the sense that they have a lot less to lose right off the bat than North Korea does in engaging in any form of serious conflict, let alone open nuclear warfare. And just to put everybody at ease, all this talk of, oh, well, Russia could share an ICBM and it could take out the entire electrical grid of the United States. And yeah, but remember, the majority of our nukes are at sea with the U.S. Navy. So remember that acronym, MAD, M-A-D, Mutually Assured Destruction. That's the whole bottom line here that Mr. Wellon and I have talked about. He's talked about it, now I'm talking about apart from him. And that is, Iran wants that respect. They'll use it if necessary, but they want to conduct business. They want to look at their the aforementioned closeness economically between Iran and Germany. All right, this is about having a secure place to, yes, combat their Islamic rivals at Saudi Arabia. That's another issue Mr. Wellon is elucidated on quite well in the past. I'm not going to do so here, but that dynamic is there, okay? North Korea, they don't have the legs to stand on as is. We're talking about the majority of their citizens outside of Pyongyang don't consistently have electricity or the internet, or at least access to it. We're talking about the people outside of Pyongyang. It's, for lack of a more beautiful phrase coming to mind at the time, it's a third world country outside of Pyongyang, and very strangely peopled, and the building setup is very odd there, but that's another story for another time. So before I make too much more of a mess of this, because I feel like I'm successfully doing this, North Korea is perhaps going to be more difficult to settle, as far as I think there's more of a cult of personality going on in North Korea than there is in Iran. But I think his ego is going to have to be played to a little bit more than the arrangement between the Iranian or the Iranian, the temple and the political leaders. It's a different deal there. Whereas North Korea, it's by and large one guy, unless there's some North Korean syndicate like the X-Files where they're actually running the show. This kid, as long as he gets his $45 a pack cigarettes, and no, I'm not joking, that's either 45 or 54, but that's what they cost, French cigarettes he gets imported. As long as he gets to do that, and there's always the same guy standing there writing notes. There's that. There's pictures. It's Kim Jong-un, and there's a General 12, and they've got 88 ribbons. And someone, there's always a guy there with a little pad and paper. It's all pointing and smiling. Oh, yeah, look, yeah, a camera, I see it. Well, there's this one guy who's studiously got his pencil, pad and pen. It's a bizarre photo shoot every time before President Trump got elected, but so we don't really know where the North Korea thing's going at this point, if the summit's even going to happen. So that's going to be the long and short of my response or my addressing North Korea. We really don't know. They haven't even met yet. Iran, this chapter in the story is not over yet. let alone the story. We still got a few days to go, a few weeks to go yet, in which President Trump could say, hey, this was just leverage. We're altering the deal, but the deal is still on. Or at the very end, he could say, hey, look, we did try and work something else out, but it didn't pan out for us. We'll get them next time. It could go either way there in Iran too, but that's going to be it's just going to be a completely different process the way this goes down with Iran and North Korea. If he pulls off one, let alone two, and we should be cheering for the president here as far as it's not against yet, but it's certainly with opposing interests than North Korea and Iran, with which we come to the table, as well as our allies. So it's important to remember that. Let's not, to those who, I get it, they get caught up in the never-Trumping or the on the far left, the progressive side is just, it's like never-Trumping, but just hating, basically. And I get that. You feel the way you feel. He certainly has not tried to soften any blows, the president. With that, though, I would say that it's important for us, as we kind of come to a close here on this, it's important that we maintain some semblance of civility in our dialogue because, you know, everyone's saying it, how the media is just too acerbic, it's too caustic, there's too much tribalism, as the host of this podcast normally, far better host, would say, look, the tribalism's out of control, and it is. I don't know exactly what happened. It was before President Trump's time in office, well before it. But I remember it being in the United States Navy. Mr. Wellheim was in the Army. And I was talking to one of my fellow corpsmen, and I said, is it just me? Or this was 2011, 2012, we're talking here. I said, is it just me, or did something really way beyond just the Patriot Act change in this country after 9/11? Like, it feels like the entire dynamic of the conversation for years has been, well, if you vote for Barack Obama, well, you killed Jesus and you don't love the Constitution. And on the other side, it's, well, if you're Republican and you're pro-gun and you're anti-abortion, well, then you ought to go to hell. You know, it's equally caustic on both sides. It's expressed differently, and that's why I would have worded it differently, but I understood what the president was overall driving at when he referred to the white supremacists who were at a rally with equally violent progressives on the other side, why the president said, well, there were good people on both sides. I wouldn't have phrased it that way, especially when one of the two sides was explicitly, forget white supremacists, any racist group, but was, they were explicitly a hate group. So I don't know if that makes any difference, that one hides it better than the other, or one's just brazen. I don't know. But the bottom line is, let's not let our potential, depending upon who you are in this audience, let's not let our dislike, the proverbial, the royal R here, let's not let our dislike for someone's personality forget who's side we're all on, and that should be the side of the American people and our allies, and of course in the case of our potential enemies, to still, especially with people, their people, treat them like human beings. Let's remember that element here, that we cannot continue just simply talking about, well, the everything's just so rough now, like, what if you're not going to be a part of renewed conversation, that's fine, but zip it and let the adults in the room talk. Okay. So, long story short, I'm going to try very much and have this up, and Mr. Welline and I continuing with episode 124 and 125. I certainly apologize for my hastily arranged transitions at times. I certainly miss Nate, and I know you all do as well. Thank you for listening, and I hope I haven't driven entirely everyone away. Without Mr. Wellheim here, I'm nowhere near as charming as I would like to be when he is here, and thinking that I'm going to reach out to the audience and be all charismatic, and then, I don't know, Nate's a charming guy. Ask Sarah. All right, but everyone, y'all have a great one, and we'll see you next time. Au revoir.